Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Have you been listening to Build Your Brand podcast with Jeff Eccles? This week, we released episode 9, where Jeff shares his lessons on working toward a higher cause and finding your purpose. Build Your Brand is a story-based podcast focused on branding, culture, and storytelling for us, small firm architects. Jeff tells the fascinating stories behind the best brands in the world, analyzing their journey to the top and repackaging lessons learned as effective strategies for small firm architects on the way to becoming the best. This season at Build Your Brand is telling the story of Southwest Airlines. What can we as architects learn from one of the best brands in history? Listen and learn at Build Your Brand Podcast. Build Your Brand Podcast with Jeff Eccles. It's just one of the great podcasts you'll find at the network built for the AEC industry, Gable Media. Listen and subscribe today to all our shows at Gable Media, gablemedia.com, gablemedia.com. Hello, my name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 331, Copywriting for Architects, with Nikita Morel. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAP, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more for free at rcat.com, and Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. Nikita Morel, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
It's great to have you here. This is going to be a very interesting conversation. This is a topic that so many architects need to hear, including myself. It's a very, very important piece. We've sort of danced around the topic of copywriting in the past, but we've never really had an entire podcast episode dedicated to it. And so I'm really excited to have you here, Nikita, to talk about words and why they matter and how we can use them to really communicate our message and our stories to the people that really matter. Nikita Morel is a copywriter, and she's a marketing strategist for architects. She works with people like us, and she's on a mission to fight archibabble. Sort of, you know what that is. I don't even need to describe what archibabble is. I'm sure Nikita may also define it a little bit, but I'm sure you know exactly what it is. Nikita, I would love to hear your background about sort of what inspired you to focus on marketing and copywriting, and specifically working with architects. Tell us your origin story.
Sure. So I guess I started in brand management, so working for big firms like L'Oreal and Tip Top, which is a big brand company over here in Australia. And so I got a very good foundation in what branding was, what marketing was, but I just knew it wasn't a good fit. And around about that time is when I fell in love with design. I would walk into restaurants and rather than commenting about the food, I'd be looking at the lights and that. So I did just a side hobby. I did a diploma in interior design. And then from there, I thought, how can I get into this world? You know, I'm not equipped to be an architect or a designer. I just knew I didn't have it in me, but how can I help and, you know, put my skills towards this industry? So that's when I worked for an architecture publishing magazine here in Sydney, in the media department, which was a lot of selling, advertising, as well as dipping in and out of the editorial team as well. So doing a bit of writing there. And then from there, I thought, I just want to see what it's like to work inside an architecture firm. So I went in-house and started up. I approached one of my favorite architecture firms here and said, look, I know you don't have a marketing communications department. Let me start one up for you. So funnily enough, I think, luckily enough, they agreed and I started their marketing communications department. So I worked there, 3 to 4 years and just kept thinking, I can be doing this for more firms. And that's when I took the leap to start my own practice. And I've been doing that now for around 3.5 years. And I'm a copywriter and marketing strategist for architects. And, I do prefer to work with the small guys, so the solo kind of architects or the smaller teams.
Yeah, that's us. That's our community.
Yes.
I would love to understand more about what you do. I mean, I understand you do copywriting and you do marketing, but what specifically when you're working with a small firm in Australia or anywhere, because you work anywhere in the world, what do you typically do for somebody?
Sure. So I guess every project starts off the same, whether it's copywriting or marketing. And I sit down and I call it a discovery session. And whether it's face-to-face or, via Zoom, I understand their practice and see what problems they're having. So it always starts with problems and solutions. So I don't even have set packages, It's more just me going in and saying, okay, what's happening? Is it that your project pipeline, you're finding it hard to get projects in the door? Or is it that you keep attracting the wrong types of clients, or the ones that you just really don't want to work with? So it's about finding their problems. And after that, that's when I come up with solutions. So sometimes I might say, look, I think to get better referrals, to get more referrals than that, you need a referral system in place. Or I think maybe your website needs to be redone or you need better marketing tactics, and that's when the services kind of come. But it always starts with this kind of real deep dive into the practice and not on a shallow level, but I just really want to understand, how their practice is working. Why did they start? Who they want to work with and things like that.
What do you find is the most common problems or mistakes that architects are making?
I think that they're trying to service everyone all at the same time. They say we're a multidisciplinary studio, we're a full service team and we're doing this, and this and that. And I think, I find that maybe it's seen as a really good thing to be working on heaps of different projects and, that diversity. But for me personally, and the things that I've seen work are going in and saying, look, you need to do two things. You need to stand out. So, and then not only do you have to stand out in that, when I say stand out, I mean brand identity, your tone of voice, the way your logo, all that kind of thing. But you also need to stand for something, be the expert in what you do. Have a value proposition. I know that's a bit marketing jargon, but it's just saying, what you do, why you do it and who you do it for, and have that area of expertise. And when those two things come together, what you find is for these smaller firms, they start to get what you call visible expertise. So they start being seen because they're standing out and they start being heard because they've got that expertise. So that's the main problem, I think, is they're just trying to, be everything to everyone rather than really focusing on what they're good at and play to their strengths.
Yeah, it's very often to hear that architects want to be generalists. And you see it all the time on their websites that they specialize in architecture of residential and commercial and industrial and restaurants. And we specialize in all of this. And first of all, you're not specializing in anything if you're specializing in everything. But the idea of focusing on one discipline, or not one discipline, but becoming an expert in one thing that you're known for is something that I've talked about for a long time, talking about target markets. And I very often get pushback from architects who, especially now where the economy is starting to slow down in response to the crisis, generalist way of working and the diversity that comes with that is what is most important now, right? Because if the projects are going to start going away, having your foot in many different areas may be the thing that brings us through. What's your take on that? If focusing on one discipline or being an expert in something, I keep saying that, but being an expert in one thing, what if that one thing goes away in terms of when the economy goes away? That's an argument that I hear very often.
Definitely. And that's the pushback I normally get is like, yeah, Nikita, if the market shifts, or as you said, like, you know, that market goes away. And yes, look, but what I'm trying to say is that it's not that you put everything into this one market. You can take other types of jobs, but outwardly facing, you become an expert. And when you become that expert, what you can see is you can pivot slightly. So I know that word's been thrown around a lot lately, but it just means that you can go and just work outside what you're currently doing. So for example, you know, in my business, I'm a writer for architects, but if for whatever reason, you know, I want to move on, I want to do something different, I can work in, you know, with architectural software or architectural product supplies. So it's finding different ways in, but if you had that knowledge, if you have that expertise, what happens is rather than becoming an order taker, you just start becoming an expert advisor, and people trust you no matter what you do, they trust you. So even if you say, look, you know, the hospitality market's a bit down at the moment, and that's what you put your expertise in, if you can have a whole heap of projects that you can show and people trust that you've got the skills, you can then apply it to their project. So that's the thinking around that.
Yeah. And if the market shrinks, who are those clients going to look for? They're going to look for the expert, right? They're going to pick the expert over the generalist because that's the market. That's the expert. That's the one that's going to be most qualified, or at least perceived to be the most qualified, to take on their project. I agree. And so architects need to stand out. They need to focus on their brand and stand for something. I love that. So stand out and stand for something. So you need to sort of differentiate yourself and have a strong brand. And then you also need to stand for something and have some sort of expertise. Can we get into value proposition a little bit? I've heard that term over and over again. Can you explain what that means and how architects should be looking at that and using something like that?
Sure. So what it is, I mean, really put simply, it's how you're different. Like, what's your point of difference? Like, and not only that, is what value are you bringing to any project? So a good template I like to think of is, you know, we do X for Z, you know, or for Y by doing Z. So it's just saying like what you do, you know, so we build, you know, beautiful homes for growing families so they can be proud of where they live, or so they can, you know, have fun or whatever it is. But it's just saying what you do, who you do it for, and why you do it, kind of around that.
Yep.
And the best place to put your value proposition, and this is where, you know, my defense for words comes in, but is on smack bang on your homepage, above the fold. So, you know, when you first enter it, I think that, so when people hop onto your website, they know who you are and what you stand for, you know. And I think that's a piece a lot of architects are missing, is they're not communicating what that is. And, you know, your value proposition, as I said, there are so many templates, and I'm happy to share on the show notes or something, some different ones, but it's not about being creative or tricky or clever. It's just saying what you do. And I think that's a big piece, is a lot of architects are hesitant to put it in words because they think, well, you know, it sounds so boring, but it doesn't have to be creative, your value proposition. It has to be just simple and understandable.
Simple and understandable, right?
Yeah.
And I think many architects want to create archibabble, right? They want to create this beautiful sentence. There were multiple sentences that very, you know, want to sound very intelligent, and it gets confusing, right? And so if you need to communicate something to a client, it needs to be as simple and straightforward as it possibly can. And it needs to be right there above the fold. It needs to be there as soon as they click on your website. They need to know instantly what you do, who you do it for, and why you do it, within seconds, right? Because if they don't click right away, they're on to the next site. So it all comes down to the words, right? Which is why I wanted you on the show, because I want to talk about the words. How important are those words And how do architects sort of find the right words?
Yeah, so two-part question. I think words are very important. And I, you know, speaking to architects and working with architects, are that you are predominantly visual creatures. You do like things in graphics and visual form. But the problem with that is yes, it is important to have beautiful imagery, I'm not denying that, but words and images need to work together. And the reason for that is that images are great, but words add context. Words can tell a story. Even in terms of memorability, like, you know, things being remembered, if you have a dozen different images and you start scrolling, you start to forget them. Whereas if words are associated with a picture and you start to evoke emotion and a connection, that can be remembered a little bit better. And, you know, again, with an image, you look at an image and you don't know where to focus on. You know, someone might see something, another person might be looking at, you know, a timber detail, another person might be looking at the way it's said. So words add, direction and focus. They tell you what to focus on. And that can be helpful, because if you don't do that, then you're leaving it up to the viewer or the reader or whoever it is just to look at it and to make up their own assumptions. And everyone comes with pre-prepared stories in their minds. So it's up to you to step in and say, look, this is what you should be looking at. And that's it. And so I think that's why words are important. Sorry, Mark, I forgot. What was the second part?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Well, but here's another question. The other question is so let's say we're a residential architecture firm and I create a value proposition, a really simple statement that I'm going to put on my website so people know who I am, what I stand for, and who I serve. How do I make, and I want to differentiate myself, right? So now I've made it very simple, very straightforward, but I still need to differentiate myself. If it gets too simple and too basic, how do I differentiate myself from the other 10 other residential architects that my clients are looking at?
So there are a lot of different ways. And again, simple doesn't mean that you're, you know, trying to become generic and everyone else. But what you need to do, when you write anything, when you start, you need to, you know, you've spoken about this before on your podcast, but you need to start with that ideal client. You know, who is that one person that you are writing for? And I always say to architects, when you're writing, when you sit down to write your about page or whatever it is, your value proposition, you need to have that one person in mind. So just write to that one person. And I guess, in terms of the words you use and the way to differentiate yourself, is you can use different tone of voice. So some people might have a bit more, and I've seen it been done brilliantly, a bit more of a witty kind of tongue-in-cheek personality or come through that tone of voice. And again, it doesn't mean, just by having a personality doesn't mean that you're being unprofessional. They can both work very well together, and I've seen it been done. Or you might have a bit more of an informative, serious tone of voice. So what you're trying to do is create that brand and that brand's voice so that you sound different. So you're not only saying, oh, we're different because of the services we do, but we're also different because of the way we are. You know, when you work with us, this is, you know, it's almost like giving an insight into the personality and the brand of the firm. So yeah, you can be playful or witty or, you know, you don't even have to feel pressured to be all those things, but you can be serious, but simple. But all I'm trying to say is that, yeah, you can sound different as well, so that you almost feel different as a firm. And that's a really great way to cut through. So when a prospective client has 20 tabs open and they're looking at different firms that they might potentially use, if you just sound a little bit different, all of a sudden they're going to pay more attention to you. So yes.
Yeah. And the importance of what you said in the very beginning of what you just said about understanding who your client is, and identifying, you know, a specific person, because what you need to write is, it needs to resonate with them, right? They need to read it and they say, oh, that's me, right? What you just said is what I want. And you can't do that unless you know specifically who you're talking to, how they think, how they feel, what gets them excited, what gets them upset. All of those things need to be understood in order to be able to write in a way, something that when they read it, it clicks with them. And you've experienced it. When you're on a website and you read some specific text and it just feels good. It just feels right. It feels like I should be part of this and this company should be part of me. That comes from the right words. And so it's super important. This episode is supported by our platform sponsors, Arcat and gusto. You know, it might be a while before we start attending trade shows again. So what's your plan? What's your plan to stay up to date with new building products and building materials, information, all of that stuff that you find when you go to your expo? RCAT works with leading manufacturers to showcase their products and host their technical data. You can see what's new from your favorite manufacturers, or find a product that you didn't even know you needed, just like you do when you walk the floor at your favorite expo. Looking for a way to keep up with your continuing education requirements? Did you know that RCAT works with manufacturers to list their latest continuing education courses so that you can get those credits while you stay at home? And best of all, like everything RCAT does, it's free. No payment, no subscriptions, no registration. You don't even need to give them your email. It's all there waiting for you for free. Use RCAT to keep up with the latest and greatest architectural products and let them know that we sent you so they know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Visit RCAT today at RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. RCAT.com. I know what it's like to be an entrepreneur architect because I'm a small firm architect too. I know what it's like to wear all those hats. And some of those hats are great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, not so great. That's where our friends at Gusto come in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses like ours. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and simple management tools all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your taxes so you don't have to worry about it. And when you're ready to add on health benefits or a 401k for your team, they can do that too. Easy, no stress. Those old school clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work, but Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You have better things to do, like being an architect. Members of the Entree Architect community receive 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Try a demo today and see for yourself at gusto.com/architect. That's gusto.com/architect. RCAT and Gusto. Please visit our platform sponsors today. Let them know that Entree Architect sent you and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So once we sort of get those right words, what do you say to architects who are using their website? They want to have those beautiful, professionally photographed projects dead center, and that's the most important piece. And the architect, you know, the word sort of becomes secondary to that. What do you say to architects that want to have that visual-based site? They want it to look beautiful before before the words become prominent.
Look, that's the thing. Like, I'm not saying that words need to be, you know, like size 40 font across your beautiful project image, but they can be interwoven and they can be seamlessly there. And with those architects, I tell them, look, it doesn't have to be a lot of words. I'm not talking like big essays. I'm just talking about the right words. So, you know, there's a firm here in Australia called Trias, and they have a beautiful website, and that is their visuals are, they, you know, center stage, but the words just complement, you know, them, it just the images so beautifully, and it talks to, you know, what they as a firm believe for, stand for. And I think just something to add is that a lot of architects, in their words, they're quite me-centric. So actually last year I studied 663 architecture websites, and I made a video for each day for 30 days, just about all the different fixes. And one of the biggest things is, yeah, they are me-centric. So it's all about, you know, we're an award-winning studio. We've worked globally. We do this, we do that. And I think what needs to happen in the industry as a whole is, instead of saying we're so amazing, you know, flip the script and say your project will be so amazing when you work with us. So it's this idea about putting it back on the client. And then, you know, you can strip the words back, because it's just, as you said before, Mark, it's just like for them to hop onto the website and they've got these questions going through their head saying, you know, are these guys expensive? Can I trust them with my project? You know, have they got enough experience? So it's about your words answering those questions before they have those objections, have time to kind of, you know, expand in their heads.
Right. So if a client gets to, or a potential client gets to your website, They read that first value proposition, and it does click, and they're excited about it, and they click through to the other pages. Those words are really important too, right? And so there's the about me page or about us page that everybody has on their site, and project descriptions. Those are two pieces that are really difficult to write, right? Because I think that the about me page is always about me, right? And you were just talking about how it shouldn't be about me. It should be about our client. And so let's talk about each one of those. The about me page, I'm just going to call it about me, but maybe there's a better word that it should be. And then also, how do we put together the right words for the images in our portfolio and the projects that we're presenting? So let's start with the about page. What is your suggestion on the about page?
Sure. So I think it should be called just about. I think sometimes people get a bit too creative and, you know, like our manifesto or our story is, you know, but I think sometimes about, because again, remember, this is the key thing to remember, is that your prospective clients are most likely not other architects. So the more jargon that you put in, the more they're not going to, your prospective client may never have worked with an architect before. So you need to keep, that's why you need to keep it simple. But with the about page, it's actually, there's two parts to it. And I think smaller firms get this a bit confused as well. There's the about section, which is about your practice, and then there's the bio, which is about you. You know, and that can get a bit confusing if you're just a solo firm and you're kind of like, where's the line drawn? But they're two separate sections. So I'll run them through them a bit quickly. But the about section, yeah, that's about your practice. So what I tell my clients is that you need an opening hook. Like you need to really hook your readers in, because otherwise they're not going to keep reading. So that opening line could be anything from like a quote to a belief statement to an interesting anecdote or a question, you know, something that's going to get the reader hooked in and really expresses the essence of your firm and why you started. And that why you started can get lost in the piece as well. You know, if you've been in business 10 years, you lose focus as to why you actually started the damn thing. But yeah, so that's about that's how to open it. And then again, it doesn't have to be a big essay. It can just be, you know, why you started. Forget all the award winning and all that. I mean, that can come right at the bottom, but talk about your beliefs. Like, what do you believe in? What's your design philosophy? What, you know, what gets you up and, you know, puts you at your desk every single day? So those kind of things. The reason you do that is because the reader or prospective client, that's going to be more of an emotional connection. That's going to build the trust and familiarity. And if you think about it, some prospective clients may not have even met you yet. So it's you know, the first meeting, essentially. It's your first impression. So make it count. And then after the about section, you know, is that bio. And the bio is more about you as a person. And again, look, yes, include where you went to uni and include where you graduated and all your registration, all that. That's important. But, you know, you can even put it as a table down below. But what really matters is, rather than talking about your achievements, talk about your ideas and your strengths. Mm-hmm. So talk about you as a person. Because, again, it's your first impression. So rather than, you know, for example, say, you know, it's a bit cliche, but you know, you're a people person, or you know, you have a specific passion in XYZ, and this could be outside the realm of architecture. Get people to know you as a person.
Sorry,
I went on a bit of a rant, but they're the two things that an about page should have, and beautiful images of yourself as well. I know a lot of architects shy away from having a headshot, but it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, you want to resonate, right? You want people to read that bio and connect with you, right? You don't want to impress them. You want to connect with them. The impression, you know, impressing is important as well. You want to prove that you're competent and you're qualified. But you want to make that emotional connection with them. And I love that. So what about project descriptions? So they read about your firm. They love that. There's the connection with the firm. They believe what you believe, and then they read on, and they read about you and your team, and they're making a connection with you as people. Now they click over to the projects, and they start going through the beautiful photographs. First of all, should there be descriptions? And if there should be descriptions, what do you recommend in terms of how to write those descriptions?
Sure. So first, yes, definitely there should be descriptions. And again, remember, I'm talking from the perspective of you getting better clients and more clients through the door. And that, you know, it's different. A description that you might write for an architecture journal, very different to the one here. Remember, you're talking to ideal clients and you know, so people you want to bring in and trust. So they've got their own project in mind. So when they click onto your project descriptions, they're kind of scanning them saying, okay, this is similar. Yeah, I can see. So what you need to do with your project descriptions, you need to do two things. You need to tell a story. And I know this, again, is something that gets thrown around a lot. You know, tell a story. Well, what?
That's because it's important.
But telling a story, exactly. And telling a story, really what it is when we read any story, it's, again, what you just said, Mark, it's about having that emotional connection. It's about really kind of taking the reader on a journey. So saying, this is what the brief was, and this is how we solved it, and, you know, design features. And this is, you know, how we kind of came to resolution, a design resolution. But the thing is, I think a lot of architects, they come to me and they think, well, how do I write about this thing? Like, where do I start? That's the biggest question. Right. Where do I start? And I say, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a paragraph of text. Make subheadings, you know, like make it easy for a reader to skim, because they're not going to sit there reading, you know, a fat block of text. So maybe have a subheading that says the brief. And then, you know, our solution or three design features. And then that way in your mind, when you're sitting down to write as well, it just that blank page, it kind of you're filling in the gaps. And yeah, another thing in terms of mindset is when you are writing your project descriptions is if you are feeling stuck, and it is, it's hard because you're so close to it and things you think might be amazing. You know, remember, go back to the ideal client. Are they going to find that tiny detail, what you did? You know, or is it the bigger picture that they want to know about the client and how the growing family is loving their new house? So you need to think about that. But I always say to clients, just pick someone, you know, call your mom, call a random colleague, call someone and just tell them, look, I just need to talk about this. Just listen. And sometimes just talking about the project and, you know, voice record yourself. But just talking about it, that can get the ideas flowing. And then it's almost just translating those things into words. So that's, yeah, just one kind of tip or hack that I think.
That's a good suggestion. That's where Archibabble usually finds its way right into the websites is in those descriptions. We try to be so, you know, elaborate in what we're writing. And again, we're trying to impress everybody. I love the idea of recording ourselves while we're talking to somebody who may not know what we know. Right. And so we have to explain it to them. And by explaining it to somebody who doesn't know, you'll be forced to simplify it and sort of bring it down to the level where everybody can understand it. I love that idea. So anything else about descriptions?
Again, you need the images and words to work together. Yeah. So a lot of people say, well, do I start getting the images and then the words, or which way does it go? And I always suggest, you know, you're a visual creature, so start with the images and then make sure the words are telling a story and flowing as well. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to present. You can have like a carousel with images sliding, or you can weave the text with the pictures, like an editorial style. So, yeah, there are a lot of different ways to present that information, and it's up to you and your brand and your ideal client what's going to resonate with them. So, yes.
And then there's one last page that is on every website, and it's the contact page.
Yes.
What is there anything that we could do other than sort of have a phone number and, you know, a form? Is there anything we can do to sort of continue making that connection with our clients on the contact page?
Yeah, so I always talk about the contact page as like that long forgotten second cousin. Like, it's just kind of chucked in at the end. No one really gives it much thought. You know, you're exhausted by the time you get there. But for me, I find it a very important page, because the whole point of your website, let's be honest, is to get great clients to get in touch with you or to feel that trust and connection. So, but the call to action of any website really is that, let's just send me an email, let's set up a consultation or whatever it is. So when they get to that contact page, they need to, it's that final, like, yep, I'm going to do this. So a few things, again, I think it's important to carry on that tone of voice. You know, so tell them, you know, if you have a project in mind, or even if you're at the stage where you're just throwing ideas around, get in touch. So write that, you know. And then with the contact form, which is very popular these days, I tell clients, this can almost act as your online security guard, right? What if you, the more kind of filters and drop boxes you have, the more you're filtering out some of those people who just want to pick your brain or the tire kickers. So, for example, I say have a drop down box for, you know, the budget, and people kind of go, a lot of architects, oh, I don't want it. But, you know, that's kind of setting an ideal client's expectations as well, because, you know, the lowest budget, they might think, oh, this is out of my budget, I'm, you know, not going to get in touch. Or, you know, say, describe your project in a few sentences, and by the responses, you'll be able to see if they're serious or not. If someone just writes one word, you think, but if they take the time to say, this is what my needs are, then yeah, they might be a bit more serious. So yeah, there's just being a bit more considered in how you set up that form as well.
Yeah.
So,
yes. And that also, that form and the information that you get from that form also helps you prepare for that first contact, that, well, beyond the contact form, but that first conversation. That you'll have as much information as you want, you can get through that form, and then you have the information that you need to have that conversation and be able to filter out the clients that you're not interested in talking to. Right. Right. Before we wrap things up, I wanted to sort of acknowledge the fact that things are different now, right? Things are different in the way the economy has shifted and the way that people are interacting with one another. Is there anything special that we should be doing in terms of acknowledging that in the words that we're using on our website, in the words that we're using when we send emails? People are sort of stressed and they're emotional and they're worried. Is there anything that we should be doing, or should we just be sort of business as usual?
Look, I think it comes down to that empathy piece, and I think it's just being aware, you know, as I've been talking, and the common thread of this whole conversation is that ideal client. So, you know, when you are talking to your clients, you need to put yourselves, and, you know, we're all feeling it, so putting yourselves in their shoes. And I think it's just that generosity of knowledge at this point, you know, just being generous and kind to people. I know it sounds really basic, but it's just saying, like, going that extra step, because, you know, we're all, as I said, we're all feeling it. So, yeah, I think it's just rather than changing anything dramatically, it's more just having that extra bit of empathy, you know, giving people a bit more leeway in terms of timings and deadlines, and, you know, if you know you can help them in some way, then do it, don't hesitate. So yeah, that's my advice.
Yeah I think that's very good advice. Nikita, before we close the door here, is there I'd like to ask you the one question that I ask everybody. What is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
Well, look at your words. I mean, it comes down to that. Words matter, as I've been banging on about. So just really go to your website, start there, start small, start with your website, start with your homepage, and just, yeah, really nut out a clear value proposition. And it's not easy. It takes time, but that's where I would start.
All right. Her name is Nikita Morell. You can learn more about her at nikitamorell.com. I would check out her website for sure. It's a beautiful website, beautiful words.
Thank you.
It resonates very much with me. And so I would suggest that you go check out Nikita's website and look at how she presented herself and her company and learn from it. While you're there, go check out the shop. She's got a bunch of, explain the shop. Tell me a little bit about the shop.
So yeah, the shop's being made for the small kind of architecture firms that don't have big budgets to hire copywriters, because copywriters can be expensive. So yeah, it's full of toolkits, and they're not templates, but it's a step-by-step guide. It's full of real examples of other architecture firms, so you can draw from inspiration from them. But yeah, it'll take you step-by-step and help you build your about page, your website bio. So it just stops you from feeling scared of that blank page. It takes you through, and by the end, I can guarantee that you've got something worthy to put up on your website.
Great. So you can find that at nikitamorell.com, at nikitamorell.com/shop. There's a little link right at the top in the menu. We'll have links to everything on the show notes, so you can go to the show notes for this episode, and we'll have links to all of that as well. Nikita, this has been a great conversation. I love words, and so I love talking about words, and I love how words can affect people. You know, the right words in the right place can really change the way people think. And so it's a really important conversation. So I appreciate you coming by here for a little while and talking about words and how important they are. And I appreciate you for sharing your knowledge here at Entre Architect Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Mark.
You have been listening to episode 330. 31 Copywriting for Architects with Nikita Morel. The link to the show notes and the link to share with a friend is entrearchitect.com/episode331. Please share that link with a friend. And I know you've already done this. I know you've shared links with friends before because I know we grow every week because you are sharing. But share this link with a friend that doesn't know anything about what we're doing. Never mind what we're doing here at the podcast. They've never heard of us. Send it to them. entrearchitect.com/episode331. I would appreciate that. You know, if you are interested in learning more about copywriting for your website, for your proposals, for press releases, wherever you need words to work for you, I encourage you to go visit Nikita's website and learn how you can connect and work directly with Nikita. She'll help you do it. Or visit her Word Shop. She has a great store there called her Word Shop, where she offers an affordable series of easy-to-follow toolkits, everything you need to write better website and marketing messaging. Visit Nikita's Word Shop today at entrearchitect.com/word shop. One word, Word Shop, entrearchitect.com/word shop. And as an added bonus, when you purchase with Nikita, she will share a percentage of your purchase with us here at Entree Architect so we can continue to build valuable resources and content for the Entree Architect community. Isn't that awesome? So visit Nikita's Word Shop at entrearchitect.com/word shop. So she knows that you are a member of the Entree Architect community if you use that link, entrearchitect.com/word shop. Go check out Nikita's Word Shop, copywriting toolkits, purchase what you need, and help support what we're doing here at Entree Architect. And that would be awesome. entrearchitect.com/word shop. My friends, be well. Be healthy, be happy, safe, and secure. Thank you for listening. Now more than ever, share this with a friend. Love, learn, and share what you know.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.